Well, welcome to this episode of When You Just Want a Glass of Wine. Cheers. I got to do the clink.
Cheers, cheers.
Clink. Cheers, cheers. There we go.
Cheers.
So we are doing something just a little bit different today. My partner in wine, my dear friend Renee Gentry, is home with her mom. Sadly, her stepfather passed, so a toast to him. But I am here being substituted. Well, Nick Renee is being substituted by Nick Materese from Siema Wines, who we've had on our show before and a really good friend. And also Alex of Hard Rock Cafe, because I am in the Hard Rock Cafe in downtown DC. And today's episode is called Corporate Lists and Rockstar Sips. Finding wine gems at the Hard Rock Cafe and corporate. And along the way, we have a wonderful friend here, Danielle, who's going to be giving me some food. I've got a little fried chicken sandwich, these sliders, which is really amazing because this morning I was on Fox 5 with Rock Harper talking fried chicken and sparkling. Nick, you can attest to the fact that that's an amazing pairing.
Absolutely. Any fried food, but definitely, you know, there's a trend right now for fried chicken and bubbles, fried chicken and rosé. It makes everybody smile and be happy. One of the greatest things you do.
That was our second one. We did a little Barbersville rosé with the next version of his fried chicken. So anyhow, we're going to set the stage here. As I said, I am upstairs at Hard Rock Cafe. It's nice to be back here. It's a 999 East Street Northwest, if I got that correct. But let's start. Let's start talking about our theme, and then it'll give me an opportunity to take a couple little bites. Tell us a little bit about Hard Rock and its founding and how it's made itself to DC, because I feel like it's been in here for, has it been 20 years?
It's been there for quite a while. I don't have the exact date we went to DC off the top of my head. The Hard Rock Cafe was founded in 1971 in London, and we call it Old Park Lane. Exceptional location. It used to be a Rolls-Royce dealership, and our founding fathers went in there and wanted some just American fun food and burgers and you know, that era, it was all about rock and roll. It was about being casual and nonchalant and having fun, and they wanted that in London, so that's what they did, and it took off from there. I believe the memorabilia stuff came closer to the end of the 70s, 78, 79. And that's when, you know, all of the superstars started coming in there and trying to, you know, claim their space and getting territorial and saying, well, I'm going to put my guitar over my favorite seat, et cetera.
Right. So I remember going wherever I traveled. I remember there was always a Hard Rock, like, especially through the 90s when I was traveling a lot. Like Taiwan and God, all over Hong Kong, all over the place.
Everywhere. And you know, I started working for the company 11 years ago. And somebody mentioned, you know, it's hard to go into an airport and it's hard to travel without seeing a Hard Rock Cafe shirt. And sure enough, ever since somebody said that to me, I have a really hard time getting through an airport or traveling without seeing a Hard Rock Cafe shirt somewhere. You know, so it's cool to see where they've been.
What makes DC such a good place to have a Hard Rock? Because it has been successfully here. It's in a wonderful location, right? There's the Lincoln Theater nearby. It's kind of right downtown. But what made DC such an interesting location?
Well, DC is a beautiful city to start with, right? I think that DC having the history, DC having the culture, it's such a melting pot for so many different people. I don't want to call it a transient environment, but it's not like the majority of people in DC grew up in DC. So you get people from all over the world. You get people that are looking for different things. It's such an amazing city. So it's a perfect spot for us to put one of our iconic cafes. To be able to speak to that. And we have that tourist destination. So we know that they're getting the volumes, they're getting the, you know, the flow of individuals that are coming through. And we want to be in those places where people are traveling to. So when they need that little moment of comfort and the familiarity, then they know they can come to us.
Well, that's what I saw coming in the door too. Sorry, Nikki. That's what I saw when I came in. I noticed there was conference people, there was tourists, There are people from the area. Obviously, I'm local. There are people sitting up at the bar. But that must be a little challenging for your wine list and your menu. But Nick, you were going to say something right before I jumped in, because I'm not really good at this whole Zoomy thing. So excuse me.
No, I was just going to say it fits. I know my sister moved down to DC in 1992. And one of the must stops when I came down to visit her was going to the Hard Rock Cafe at that time, because it was still, you know, as that, what was the old tagline, the embassy of rock and roll. And it just fit with Washington, D.C., you know, being an outpost. And so I had to get that shirt. You know, I was one of those people that was walking around. And it's always been just a great place that brings so much together. And like you pointed out the familiarity to it. And I think that's what Zena was just going into. How do you take that familiarity that everybody has and then compress it into something that is accessible when you have such a wide audience and a wide breadth of food and flavors and everything else to go with?
That's a wonderful question. And my approach is, you know, we want to be the best version of ourselves, be true to ourselves. We need to really understand exactly what we're trying to accomplish on a day-to-day basis, and be the best Hard Rock Cafe that we possibly can, with the emphasis on the quality of the food, the from scratch cooking, the amazing cocktails, the exceptional service, right? Hospitality when you walk into a cafe, and the way that they greet you and the way that they just breathe and live the culture. Those are the things that are really important to us. So no matter where we go, as long as you're able to execute those things right, then you know that people are going to enjoy it and people are going to love it. And you have to make sure that you're not trying to be everything to everyone, right? Because then you lose focus yourself and you lose your own concept. So when we're thinking about the food or we're thinking about the wine, it's just, you know, make things that taste good, make things that taste great, and give them great hospitality.
How do you create a list, like a wine list? And I guess my first question is really, is the wine list here in DC the same list that's, you know, corporate wide, or is this a specific list? And along that lines, do you have flexibility to add anything? Because I see some great favorites in here that we'll talk about. But how do you create a wine list to fit into DC and then within your corporate world?
So on average, let's say there's about 10 to 15 wines on the wine list amongst the cafes. And we do have to break it down a little bit regionally. Specifically, North America has a lot more commonalities between the different cafes. But once you get into Europe, which is very, very regional, then we really need to understand and be adaptable for our guests. We'll start with a base. And then as the cafes go through, we can decide, you know, the model that we need to go with and what works and what doesn't work. If we need a little bit more red, if we're in California, and we know it's close to wine country, do we need to add a few more wines in there? If you're in a shopping center and a shopping area where lunch is a big thing, we might go a little bit heavier on the whites by the glass. So we try and get strategic. There's a lot of commonality to it, and we want to make sure that we have really good structure to what we're doing. Call it, you know, we'll give a little bit of framework to what we're doing. And we've got amazing partners that we try and make sure that we do right and support them as well as they support us.
Well, I will say, like, I'm looking at the list right now, and it's recognizable, and also things that I love. So luckily, I've got a Chardonnay here, and I have your Hampton Water Rosé, which I love, and I have your Freak Show Cabernet, which has been, Nick, I don't know if that was you who distributed it when we were up in Maryland, but it has always been one of my favorites. It's just such a good cab.
That was our old friend Russ Benson who started that.
Cheers to Russ for that. So, I mean, you have a conundrum here. You have Francis Ford Coppola. I've always loved Coppola wines. I've even visited them out in California. You have Chloe Pinot Grigio. They're a great partner. I worked with them. It was one of the Proseccos I had when I first opened Beauty. So you definitely have wines that are recognizable, well-priced, especially in today's world, and both by the glass and by the bottle. So when somebody comes in here, do they have, is this it? Do you sometimes have any specials or anything local, or is this really the list, or maybe happy hour or something that comes in and out?
We have happy hour in some locations, not all of our locations. And so those can have, you know, provide a little bit of variety in our offerings. They'll have a local menu in our cafes. So those can vary in range. So you might have a wine on there. There might be a, you know, local cocktail featuring something for the guests that are there wanting to see a little bit more locality.
And when you come into, when you come into your own Hard Rock, wherever you are, you're down in Florida, Nick's up in Maryland, I'm here in DC. What are the wines that you like to drink when in your list?
Well, I'd like to think they're all my Hard Rocks, and I take a little bit of ownership and fondness for all of them. So you can't pick one child, right?
Is there a particular wine you go after? Is there something that's your favorite on your list?
I'm pretty seasonal with my wines. Mm-hmm. When I do drink, and it depends on what I'm eating. I do love the Alexander Brown Chard. I love the Conundrum.
That's what
blend.
I have right here. Just took a sip of that Alexander Brown Chard as soon as you said it. It's delicious.
Yeah. And in the Freak Show Cab, you know, you mentioned that earlier, is always a great go-to.
It's such a fun producer too. One of our friends wrote a book called Freak Show Without a Tent, Nevin Martell. And we got this was years ago when it came out. It had to be 10 years, right? And we had the Freak Show wine when he did a reading of the book. And I was like, I have found literally the perfect match for your book. Is this wine? It's really enjoyable. You were mentioning overseas that sometimes the wines are different. Is that because of the local palate? Is it more because of the tourists that hit that? Is it Americans who are expecting things, or is it locals? I know in Asia, I always felt that there were a lot more locals than tourists, actually. That's just with my experience years ago.
So I think the answer is all of above. Mm-hmm. You know, the local guests, obviously they want to, that's their palate. That's their terroir. This is what they live and breathe on a day-to-day basis. That's their comfort zone. That's the familiarity. And then people that are traveling, they may want to come in and get that familiarity of the Hard Rock Cafe, but when it comes to, you know, what they're drinking, that's where they might be willing, a little bit more willing to go outside of their comfort zone and try, if they're, you know, drinking reds in the United States or reds at home, then they'd be drinking a red outside in another place. So I think it's both of those factors, but it's also availability, where we're a little bit, you know, spoiled in the States, where it's not as regional and everybody wants to have, you know, access to everything, where we might not be able to get all of those different varietals or all those labels overseas. And we don't want to pigeonhole ourselves and stick ourselves to where we, you know, only use labels that you can get everywhere, because we really want access to do the great labels that we can at the price points that we need to hit.
Yeah, I mean, Conundrum pops out for me. I've always loved the Conundrum. That red blend is great. Again, recognizable, but also interesting. A name that makes them feel that they know it. And even if they've never tried it, they can feel comfortable. So how do you work with your staff, especially, I mean, you mentioned transit. I mean, I've been in D.C. forever. Nick, you've been in D.C., but we both weren't born here. But I mean, I've been in here a long time, since even before Hard Rock was here. How do you work with your staff to make it comfortable for people who, especially tourists, or, you know, that divide, the tourists and then the business people? Tourists might not be used to kind of ordering these wines. And then you have the business people who are like, well, this is what I want. I need something bold and blend, bold. How do you work with your staff to bridge those two sides and make ordering wine more comfortable? That's one of the goals of that kind of this podcast, making it less scary to order wine in a big restaurant, especially a corporate restaurant.
Yeah, I think that's everybody's goal, is to, you know, create that accessibility. And I think it gets better and better as the years go by. The familiarity of people with the different varietals and knowing what they're getting into, But it's training. It's training. It's you start with the staff and you get them comfortable. And once they get comfortable and they get past those hurdles of knowing the ins and outs or the nuances to it, and you make it comfortable to them and you make sure that they understand it in their lingo. You make sure they understand it in their language. So when they're able to describe it with their own word, so they don't sound too formal. They don't sound like they're reading the tasting notes. They don't sound like they're just reading the back of a card. That's where we want to go, and we want to make sure that they have that comfort level. We want to know that they've got the right to put their own little touches on it. You know, our servers are incredibly personal and personable, and letting their personalities come out is a big part of it.
Well, I will say how wonderful this is. I don't know if you can see it, but I just got the chicken Caesar salad to go with the Chardonnay we mentioned. So cheers to all of you guys. This is turning into being one of my favorite podcasts.
Yeah, cheers to you. You win.
I got it all right here. So corporate-wise, I mean, you know, I think being a small, very small, local business, woman-owned business, we have our own little training. I mean, I have one manager, even though when I owned restaurants, I maybe had 20 staff or something. How do you train your staff in the corporate world to learn? You were mentioning, so it doesn't sound rote, it doesn't sound like they're bored, it makes it exciting. How do you create that program? It's always been very interesting to me, those standards.
Constant gentle pressure. it's follow through and providing really great material. We've got a training team. We've got consistent communication patterns. We've got a ton of people that are passionate about sharing the knowledge. So that's really what it comes down to. And it's a constant flow of information and finding the right people that want to participate and be a part of it.
Do you have any of your team that go through the WSET or the sommelier training, or is it all in-house training?
Mostly in-house training. That being said, I'm sure there's a few people out there that have done the WSET or court training. We see that a little bit more in our casinos and fine dining restaurants than the cafe division specifically.
If there was a wine that you'd love to see on the Hard Rock menu and isn't there, is there anything in particular like your goal or you're working towards that you'd love to see kind of brought in the future?
That's a very interesting question. So it's not about my personal opinions. I should start with that. No, I think that we've really done a great job of curating something that speaks really well to the cafe and the you know, the personality of the cafe, and it speaks to the guests that we have as well, and they're excited for it. So you know, as we continue to find new things as they pop up that fit in the place, then we'll keep evolving.
Well, I'm going to say this shard is delicious. It's got a little bit of, I'm showing it all to you. This, you both see it. It's got just like a little bit of oak to it. Tell it, in my opinion, I don't know, I don't have the bottle, but it tastes like just a little bit of like new American oak. It's just really refreshing. I walked from the metro. It was really hot when I got in here. I'm upstairs. The air conditioning is on. And this is absolutely delicious. And I tell people this all the time, whether it's, you know, Hard Rock or another restaurant. You know, sometimes they go, I don't like, and I'm like, look, there's always going to be a shard that's going to be drinkable on the menu. And here in D.C., a glass of this, I'm looking at it, is, what am I looking at, $13.99? I mean, for a 6-ounce glass pour, that's a fabulous price point in D.C. Your $17.99 for a 9-ounce pour, that's about the price of most wines in today's world, isn't it, Nick?
That is, and that's actually one of those bottles that I wish more people would go and discover. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's Monterey-based. So it's got that combination yes. of that grapefruit with always that little Monterey, I guess you call it nuttiness to it, that seems to mimic mm-hmm. a little bit of the wood. So it keeps it drinkable while still having that full body and freshness to it. It really is just it's a fun wine that I think, again, we've often poo-pooed Chardonnay for no reason whatsoever. And that's one of the ones that helps bring it back.
I agree. I think it's easy. It's drinkable. It's nice. If I was in here and this is kind of what I've been drinking. And by the way, it's going really, really nicely with this salad.
Sure.
So all of this, I'm going to be, when we're done with this, you know, I'm sitting down and I'm devouring all of this.
Well, that salad that you have, you've got all those great notes in it. So you've got grilled chicken, you've got some freshness, some greens, you've got the little bit of the acidity from the dressing. So, you know, it is almost a balancing act that you don't want to overpower your food with your wine. You want it to always complement. And that's what that wine does. It saddles up to whatever bite you're having.
And that's a great point, Nick. So, Alex, so is one of the things that you do, are you looking at how the menu pairs with the wine? Sometimes you do it the other way. You're like, well, we have this wine partner. How are those going to pair with the dishes? Do we adjust the dishes? How does that come about?
I think we usually would find something that pairs and goes well with the type of cuisine that we're doing.
In general.
We have such a broad menu with so many fantastic flavors, but you can really run the whole gambit on something that's lighter, something that's more robust, like our ribs. Right now we're doing the World Burger Tour, for example.
I'm going to ask you about that. Yeah.
We've got, you know, we had hundreds of submittals from every cafe wanting to put in, you know, their burger and their submission of the product or what speaks to them and what makes their cafe special. So imagine trying to do pairings with all of those. So I think we were really working with the teams to say, hey, you know, if you're talking about this, well, then, you know, we need you and we need your experience to say, well, what are your recommendations here and what wine goes with it? And we try and pick wines that really are flexible. That's where we
explain that world. I have the World Burger kind of, because this is launching, I think, tomorrow. Tell us a little bit more about how the competition is working, because it sounds amazing and the pictures I'm looking at are delicious.
So we started a few months ago, and basically we announced to all of our cafes that we want them to participate and develop a burger. A, make it fantastic, and B, make it speak to their location, and something that would just be a fun addition to what we do.
Gotcha.
They spent approximately a month selling that burger to their Ooh. Guests. So then after lots of feedback, lots of tasting notes, looking how things were selling, now we're going to the next phase, and that's August 1st through September 1st.
Gotcha.
Of launching phase two, which is the five top burgers, right? So we took the, I think it was the top 15 burgers, and then we narrowed it down to the top 15. Then we put it in front of a judging panel. Then we put it across all of the different KPIs that we wanted for it and figure out what those five top burgers would be. So all cafes will be running the top five burgers. Last month of the competition, and then there can only be one king.
I'm going to pass you on the back here for this because, again, one of my favorite events that I used to do was three big cabs, one big burger. It was a promo that we used to do all the time. And I'm looking at your burger leaderboard and the fact that you got Olivia Tilden in here
as a
judge. That's just a very cool program. But the Barcelona burger, the New York Smoky Sweet burger, the Basilico burger from Milan, Bucharest burger. I have no idea. Can you enlighten us a little bit on any of these other unusual burgers, maybe?
Well, I think when you look at all of the different burgers, the key that you're gonna see is that they're also incredibly different, right? So there's a great variety there. You see that when you put something out, it's almost like the telephone game. You say make a burger, and that means 10,000 things to 10,000 different people. So it's great to see all of the personalities pop out. And we're excited to see how that comes out for the final month of the competition.
And by the way, I found Olivia during, I don't know, probably the pandemic, and now I own more made in pans because I was obsessed by watching her and she was super fun. So when I got this sent over by Wendy, I was like, oh, that is a talk about great partnerships and pairing. I'm just so excited about that. So I
Very
have moved.
talented.
No, go ahead, please.
She's a very talented chef, got a great personality. She brings a wonderful skill set to the judging panel and has really helped us elevate the word and make it something special this year.
I just took a sip of the Hampton Water Rosé from France. I, of course, being a New Yorker, was just thinking it was one of the New York wines. I was thinking, is this something out of like Bedell or Chronicle Wines or something like that? But absolutely delicious. I could do a burger with this. Nick, I kind of wish you were drinking this with me. It tastes a little like strawberry Jolly Ranch, cherry Jolly Rancher is what I'm feeling. You have it there?
I have
Close
no,
enough?
but I've got the Laffette Rosé. So as long as we're channeling Provence.
I mean, it's juicy, it's delicious. And when I was as I was we were talking through this, I was looking through it, and what I find interesting about the list is it's simple, but it has everything, right? So you have your Pinot Grigio, Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, couple of Cab Savs, because that's always, especially in DC, somebody wants a lighter and a more bold, a blend, a bubbly, and a rosé. So you purposely keep it simple. And I don't mean simple in a bad way. I just mean maybe easy, right? It's not
Yes,
like
I
four
love
different
it.
Sauvignons and five Chards and four
Right.
Pinots and
That goes back to the earlier part of the conversation where we were talking about how do you make it approachable? How do you make sure people don't feel like they're out of place? And I think that streamlining the offerings and not having so many different that it makes it challenging even for the well-versed individuals to make some decisions. So help them by elimination, right?
I always feel that like that as well when you just give them just a nice handful. But your by the glass is also by the bottle. You don't have any that are just bottle, or is that specifically in DC, or are there places where you do have by the bottle
No, that's
alone?
what.
And
Yeah, we keep it to anything that we're willing to offer by the bottle, we're willing to offer by the glass.
is there a particular reason for that, or just accessibility, just because it's just keeping it tight and not, you don't need a lot of bottles in inventory.
Yeah, I think all of the above, the accessibility and really being able to share everything that we want to bring in with all of our guests, and so nothing's at that point where they can't reach for it. I think keeping our inventories down, and we find people coming to the cafes are out for a pretty casual experience, so you'll see much more wine by the glass than you do by the bottle.
I was going to ask you that. And I mean, I think again, where you're hitting, I mean, you, to be honest, because you guys, what I like about it is it's so transparent. Because another thing, I serve a 6 ounce glass of wine of beauty. That's just, I serve a 6 ounce glass of wine. I want 2 ounces of bourbon in my bourbon. That, I don't want to, that's what I like. I feel like I'm old school in that way. And you guys are really obvious about it. It's a 6 ounce glass at $15, it's $60 for a bottle. I mean, your price points are right on. And so I think at the way that works, a lot of times people will be willing to try different glasses because it's not really cheaper, so to speak, to get a bottle. So you don't think, well, if it's $15 a glass and whatever, $45 or $48 a bottle, maybe I'll get the bottle. It looks like you're promoting people to try different things and, because it's the same thing. And I like that concept that people can come in and be like, I'm going to start with the Prosecco and maybe I'm going to go over to the a Chard and then I'll, end it with the red. I like how that works.
Yeah, we like that. We don't want to be too strict. We want people to come in and have fun, know what they want.
And see how they like it. What are you thinking, Nick?
Well, but one of the things I think that we were talking earlier before we started the podcast, how it's been a long time since I've been down to the Seminole Resort, and I know that wine list is significantly different than the cafe wine list. But when you go ahead and take a look at that list, it's just filled with not just icons, but the reliable heavy hitters. You've got your cake breads and your Montelenas and every single type of champagne. Obviously from a casino and a resort and a steakhouse setting, you've got those things. But I look at that list and I just think of the fact that I have a hard time trying to look at that list and say, that's a dog, that's a dog, that's a dog. It just doesn't happen. Everything is just 100% solid, you know, from the fact that maybe you want to poo-poo Rumbauer Chardonnay because it's the most popular.
I like a Rumbauer Chard.
But it's the most iconic Chardonnay. So anybody who says that is just, you know, I think they're looking to cause trouble with people that want to enjoy a glass of wine.
We want to speak to our guests. You know, at the end of the day, it's making them happy, and that's our priority.
I did notice that as you were talking about that, I did notice it's very California heavy. Is that any particular reason or just because of the way the partnerships go?
No, I can't say that's for any particular reason. I think that's just the way it's worked out here in the United States. And that's, again, it's what the bulk of our guests are looking for. So when they get to do their local menus, they get to, you know, come in and have fun and bring in, you know, something that might be a little bit different, whether that's from another region. And then, like I said, in Europe, they're a little bit more regional. So our Italian cafes or cafes in Spain will speak a little bit more fluently to that local varietal or local wine.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense with that.
I'm gonna give you props here for putting out things like Travellina Gattinara and, you know, Via d'Ere Cab Franc, you know, where you're I guess maybe the better way to put this is, one of the old school myths that I used to hear about restaurants and corporate lists and big things all the time is, you know, don't buy the cheapest bottle and you don't want to buy the most expensive bottle. But when you look at that second and third least expensive bottle, you're usually finding one of those bottles of wine that somebody has a love for that's on that list because it's maybe being pushed as like, hey, just give this a try. Take two steps away from what you're normally used to buying and trust us on these. Do you guys follow any of those kind of myths or anything like that in your style when you're putting together a wine list?
Well, we work in the casino industry, so there's plenty of myths. We try and curate something that's going to provide a lot of comfort and a lot of approachability for our guests. You don't want them to feel like they're in a foreign place or don't understand what's going on. We also want to have that opportunity with our amazing staff and great personalities that they can say, hey, you know, I know that you're really comfortable here, and I see that whether it's the first wine and people are maybe willing to explore, or maybe it's that second bottle and saying, hey, we loved this wine, but where can you take us, and something that might be better for the second half of our meal or something that can kind of take us to a different place. And that's where our team can step in with the training and give a little bit of their, you know, their favorites. We try and do tastings with our team members so frequently to make sure that they feel well-versed and really knowledgeable of what we have going on the wine lists.
I just remembered, as you said that, Nick, I just remembered that I did Hard Rock in Vegas for one of my friends. It was, what do you call it when it's women? Stag weekend, hen weekend, whatever we called it at that time, right? And I think her daughter is just going into college. And we had that was a great weekend. That was a nice place. I totally forgot that we had stayed there. So that's one of the casinos. And then you have something big in Florida, I think, I've been to, down in Miami, right? There's a big Hard Rock. And
we have the Hard Rock in Vegas. We actually sold that property a few years ago.
Right.
And now we're working on the new Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Vegas. We bought the Mirage. That closed down July 17th of last year. So almost a year to date. Uh-huh. We were celebrating that a few days ago. And towards the end of 2027, we'll be opening up our new casino out there, which will be amazing. We still have a Hard Rock Cafe down the street on the Strip. Mm-hmm. And that's an epic property. Three stories. It's got this amazing Hard Rock Live venue on top. So they do spectacular shows. Mm-hmm. And we've got quite a few casinos down in Florida. We are owned by the Seminole Tribe of Florida. Right. So we've got our large, iconic kind of flagship property down here, which is Hollywood, mm-hmm. which is a guitar-shaped building that is so
I've been that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So
how are you going to... So the new... the new place, is that going to be like a totally different style wine list, or is it going to follow some of the traditional things that you have here? Or are you going to have some more freedom? The one that's opening in Vegas in the Old Mirage?
The casino in Vegas will have, call it approximately 25 restaurants and bars.
Wow.
So we're going to have such an amazing time putting together the wine program and the beverage program there. It's going to be unbelievable.
So that leads me to another really fun question, because again, looking at your list, there's always, as I mentioned, these icons, these ones that pop out that are just really great, wonderful bottles, wonderful producers. Think your Stag's Leap, your Artemis, your Ace of Spades Champagne, your First Growth Bordeaux. So is it ever fun to wield a big stick when you have all of these restaurants and this power behind you? Is there ever those times when you're like, you know what, I really want this wine in the restaurant? And you go off to producers and say, you know, talk to me. Let's get some wine.
I will never admit that on a recording.
I mean, do you get to do some of those tastings? Yeah. Do you have any influence in that? Have fun with it, or?
Luckily, we do get to we do have access to a lot of amazing wines and amazing labels, and our beverage programs are really strong. So we our partnerships are fruitful.
Yeah. I love that. Well, I just took a sip of this. I've been talking about the Freak Show, but I just took a sip of it, and it reminds me why I liked it so much. And you know what I love again is this is a really affordable, nice, by the glass. I'm looking down at the menu right now. It's $15.99. And I think that's pretty miraculous for the Freak Show. And I think it's just a fun, easy drinking red, even in 90+ degree weather where I walk myself over here. And I think that, you know, it's nice, it's fresh. Oh, wait, you guys are gonna be so jealous. I'm gonna have to pack food up, but you're gonna have to wait a second, as is Nick. You know, I just want you to see what's in front of me. Just to be clear, is this the actual World Burger Champion? Wait, Danielle's over here. Is this amazing, Nick? This is gonna be the first video that we do with the podcast, and we're gonna get some pictures of this, because this is incredible. So wait, Danielle. Oh my God, it's amazing. Tell me what this is. So Danielle, come over, because you're gonna come around behind me over here, and hopefully you'll be able to hear too. Okay, there she is. Look at this.
Yes. So
tell us about this.
This is our submission for the World Burger Tour. It's called DC's Finest. It's inspired by the famous mumbo sauce everyone loves and cherishes in DC. So we actually make ours in house, have a grilled pineapple on there with jalapeno, so you get a little spicy and overall delicious.
And that's going to go really, really well with this. Yeah. So this is what you were talking about. And I mean, I honest to God, this is like, it's incredible, right? It is. This is absolutely incredible. I love, love the idea about this. So
let's punch that ticket one more time. Alex, one more time on the next phase of the World Burger Tour Challenge. It's the voting for the champion.
Yeah, so we've gone through the individual restaurants, and they're selling all of their own. And now for the next phase, which is August 1st through September 1st, we're going to be providing the top five at all of our cafes. So you would get to go in there and try five of those if you wanted to.
That's amazing. And I took a little dip of this and then took a sip of the red, and I absolutely loved it. I got a couple of last questions to kind of finish up. Nick, did you have anything before I went in that direction?
No, I'm just going to get on my little political soapbox here for a moment, though, and say Lodi needs you. If you're a wine drinker, if you're listening to this podcast, they are one of the areas that's in crisis. They're pulling up vines because they for a combination of reasons. But what Zena is pointing out is how drinkable, how enjoyable, how approachable they are. Michael and David Phillips has always exemplified that. Melissa, their winemaker, I knew for a long time. And I remember drinking with the chocolate chip cookies in the lounge of a hotel, all of the Michael and David wines, the Freak Show wines, the Earthquake wines. And it's just one of those things that it just, again, like we were talking about having a good time and a good memory at the Hard Times Cafes, when you open up those bottles of wines, you just are in this relaxed, really enjoyable position. And I think if you can help a whole entire industry by just going to Hard Rock Cafe and ordering a bottle of the Freak Show, going to your local wine shop and buying anything from Lodi and supporting those great families, this is the easy thing that we get to do in the industry. You can help everybody out just by drinking. What a great country America is.
isn't that wonderful? Yeah, and absolutely, I agree with you. I mean, again, all these wines are accessible wines. They're wines that are familiar. It's just actually really nice to be back here because I forget that how casual it is and how easy it is to be hanging out and drinking some wines and enjoying it. Super wonderful service. So, of course, towards one of my last questions I always ask, and it does not have to be a Hard Rock wine question, Alex, but what I always ask is, when you just want a glass of wine, what are you drinking?
There's so many sub questions to that.
Here's a wine guy.
Yeah, I'm seasonal with my wines, right? And mm-hmm. it depends on if I'm eating, if I'm not eating. It depends on how hot it is. I can't say there's one mm-hmm. that I would go for. I'm really into and trying to understand Malbecs from Argentina a little bit better
Love
right now.
That.
Yeah, I think Cote de Rhone is something that I'm really into right now. But as you explore and as you learn, you always want to come back to those creatures of comfort and just open a bottle that you're super familiar with sometimes and relax.
I love that. I mean, I love a good Malbec. There's just nothing like it. It's great. It's great in the summertime when you're grilling something. And it's great in the wintertime when you want something bold. And now is the season, actually. He says Cote de Rhone, and I think Windblown from McPherson, right? Like,
sure.
That's
we'll have to find a way to introduce Alex to our good friend Martin from Chateau Femme if we're going to talk Malbec. That's always one of the great ones from Cahors.
Especially his rosé of Malbec.
Yeah, true. The best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. I know I don't normally get a last question, so maybe we can do like Nick's little insert here. Alex,
absolutely.
If you're sharing wine with people, do you find yourself trying to share with your friends something that you really like, or do you try to find that bottle that you know your friends will like? Okay, if you had to go from a philosophy, what's more fun for you?
If I'm going to somebody's house and I want to bring over a bottle of wine just to share and be the good guests that you always want to be, I'll bring one of the labels that I really love or something that I've got at home that I wanted to share. I have this affinity for bringing older vintages of something.
Oh,
just
like
to surprise
that.
Everybody and say,
you
hey,
are
you know,
friend.
And it's like, that's when you say it is like, I love you guys and I want to share something special. But if you don't know people and you're just trying to come out and be on a kind of a new social moment, then you try and pick something that you know is just going to be appreciated across the board.
So one little follow-up to that. So we did a podcast a few episodes ago where we actually drank some old vintage white wines from, of all places, Michigan. Just to blow people's minds a little bit. And especially, it was fun to watch Renee drink those. So,
because you blinded her and she didn't know what it was.
What do you think is that magic of that old vintage? Is it just because we drink things too fast? And so when we have the ability to slow down and say, wow.
Well, I think it's just hard to get yourself to hang on to it for so long. So it makes it special, and the rarity of it, I think, is something that makes it special. And when you drink something that's, I hope, when you drink something that is a little bit older like that, you do take that extra moment to really think about it and say, well, this has been waiting for me for 25 years, so I can savor this moment for a few extra seconds and really enjoy that moment, right?
Yep. I actually just opened, as we get a little geeky here off the other topics, but I just opened a 2010 Kathy Corison Kronos. Oh. Yes, that. That, I opened it with my friend Wendy Gordon. and with Jimmy, and she decanted it for about an hour. Yeah, that look is exactly the look I had that Nick is giving us. Goosebumps and everything.
You never drink any nice wine when you're together with Wendy. It's
so awful. It was, but it was that, and it was beautiful, and it was something that she had particularly told me to purchase back when I took a class with Karen McNeil over on the Mastering of Wine back then, and she was like, buy this bottle, and I did, and I opened it, and it was the absolute perfect time to open it. Like, I wouldn't have held it another year, to be honest. It was absolutely perfect. But it was so nice to have something like that, right? To share this vintage that had been sitting for 15 years and to enjoy the experience of it. And we had strained it, had very little cork in it, and we had a prime rib with it, and it was spectacular. But so nice to share with friends that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed.
To really enjoy it. Alex, do you have anything to add before I ask the inevitable last question?
Anything else to add? No, thank you for having us. You know, I do appreciate the idea of the cafe, you know, being acknowledged as a great place to go, not just for a wonderful burger or a wonderful meal. We've got exceptional cocktails, and to have the capability of having a wine program that can also be supported at the cafe means a lot to us. So it's nice to be able to share that. As you can imagine, people don't necessarily say, oh, I'm going to go get some great wine. Let's go to the Hard Rock Cafe. But Then they come in and they get pleasantly surprised. Wow, I stumbled upon this and this is what they have. And that's a great note for me. And it makes me feel good to be able to share that. You know, things that we do, really try to make the accessibility for, you know, for our wine, for our drinks, for everything that we do means a lot to us. We do even have Winning Wednesdays right now. We've got this program called Own the Week. And on Winning Wednesdays, we actually do half off of our bottles of wine on, not at every location, where we're allowed to.
Can we do it in D.C.? Do we know? Because you know, Nick, we're meeting here for that, just in case. Or we'll go find where it is, and we'll be meeting out there for that. I love that, Alex. Thank you so much. So you know, there's going to be the inevitable last question, and this is a toast to Renee, and I hope you were prepped for it. But what is your favorite Pink song?
I was not.
Come on, you got no one.
I was not prepped for that. At this moment, I see myself in the camera and I realize I'm blushing significantly.
Maybe we should give Alex a little background so he can buy some time to come up with a pink answer. Long time ago, far, far away, Renee, the co-host of the podcast, fell in love with the musician Pink just for all of her songs and her
as well as Two Wolves, as well as Two Wolves Wine. Don't forget that part of it.
Then Two Wolves Winery is the winery that Pink started. And she's been making some delicious wines out there. And when we first came up with the idea of a podcast, we were just sitting around drinking and gabbing. Mm-hmm. Yes. And it was one of those ideas that we said, look, if you're ever going to try to meet your idol, you might as well put it out there into the cosmos. And when you do your podcast, ask every guest to name their favorite song, because you never know when she's going to listen or when there might be that connection that somebody says, oh, yeah, I had lunch with her the other day. Hold on, I'll introduce you. So this is why you have to have a favorite Pink song, even if you Google one right now.
And then a really good friend, Robin from Chronicle Wines, she had one of the best responses. And Robin was one of the – I'm originally from Long Island, so that's why I love Long Island wines and love Robin and Allie. But Robin said her favorite was Still a Rock Star. I'm Still a Rock Star. Yeah. That one, she had to sing it and we knew. But she said she comes in from the vineyard. She's had this day. She's schwitzing all over the place. And she has to sing that song to herself to remind herself about that.
So What is That Song?
So What is That One?
So
that's right.
I heard my stripes with Renee.
I honestly don't know.
But going forward, your new favorite Pink song is going to be.
Give me three to pick from.
Raise a Glass. Raise a Glass, which is the one that we kind of, you know, is that one? I can't sing. I mean, if Renee was here, she'd be singing Raise a Glass. So What? Right. I'm Still a Rock Star. Because I feel like that should be the hard one. Hard Rock one, yeah.
Trust Fall, Get the Party Started. That's probably one of the more popular ones.
Get the Party Started, yeah. Yeah.
Just for the name alone, I'm going to go with Trust Fall.
There you go.
I like that one. That's a really good one. And I should mention before we close off, which is going to be in just a second, that right behind me over here is Elvis Presley's mic. So this is one of the things that I have been sitting under this at a table filled with food, drinking a whole bunch of wine. Thankful so much to Danielle for helping us out. We appreciate that you spent the time here. Nick, thank you for saving us today. A toast to Renee. Toast to you all. Cheers. Thank you very much.
We'll see you at the Hard Rock in the next 5 weeks when we're having a burger every week.
Cheers. Thank you very much. Thanks, Alex.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks, Dana.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.